Welcome back, everyone, to Pops Culture. I'm your host, Jackson, and with me is the other host,
Peyton.
And we are here to have a fantastic episode. Now, today is going to be a normal episode. We promised a special guest last week. Things happen, but we will have them next week, and we are excited for it.
Yeah, we'll get to it.
As we know that... that as dads, schedules are ever-changing, so it's hard to find a routine. And then once you have a routine and something goes different, it's really difficult to get back in the routine. But we will figure this out. It's okay. We're excited for today's episode because the topic is still the same. We're going to discuss music.
Bing, bang, man. Super excited for this episode.
Oh, yeah. But first, I want to talk about something, and it's this podcast. Because I feel like since we've done this podcast, like my life has been so much more different. Like it affects me differently. So for instance, funny story. I'm sitting at the dinner table and I'm like, I started talking with my wife about future topics for top five, right? And then I was like, let me ask my oldest son. So his top five. So I did top five foods. And I don't remember exactly what he said. It was the staples like mac and cheese, chicken, pancakes, goldfish, like his you know, things that he likes to eat, obviously.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
I go to my youngest. And right out of the gate, he says, pizza. And my oldest is sitting on the toilet in the bathroom, and I just overhear him go, "Oh, I should have said that." And it just made me laugh so hard because I kept thinking about people making their own top fives and then hearing us and going, "Oh, I should have done that." And it just really made me feel good. Like, man, we really have something that people can really enjoy and hop onto, you know?
Yeah, my dad listens to the podcast regularly, and he said that that's one of his favorite parts is like when he hears our top five, he looks over at my mom or whoever's listening with him, or he thinks to himself like, "Huh, what is my top five?" Mm-hmm. So I'm glad people are enjoying that game. I think we're gonna continue to play it until we run out of top five topics,
and then we're gonna come up with something new. Yep, bottom five. today, like we said, today's gonna be a great episode because our topic is a big one that means a lot to both of us, and that is music. Now, Peyton, I want you to give us the history of music, starting from the very beginning.
Music or my music?
Okay, we'll give you your music because that'll probably be a little bit shorter.
Because I could rant on and on about music history and how awesome,
how many awesome different things there are. Going back to Gregorian chants.
Yeah, no, for real. I love Gregorian chants.
you are of one.
But yeah, you and I both started our involvement with music around the same time. We both played middle school band. You're a percussionist. Mm-hmm. I'm a saxophonist. And we did marching band all through high school together. We've played in a band together several times. And I went to school for music. I started at the Schwab School of Music back in 2018. And I've had a tremendous experience through college with music. There's a number of really wonderful people that I've had the opportunity to study under. Dr. Joe Girard is a saxophonist here in Columbus, and he teaches at CSU. He's been a great teacher for me, and he's been kind of a great role model as well in terms of how he has shaped classical saxophone into a career, which is a lot harder than it sounds. But he's given me great guidance. I've absolutely loved playing ever since I started in middle school. That's pretty much where I'm at now. I still play occasionally. I played in a lot of different ensembles in college, my favorite being like jazz combos and big band. And all of the different kinds of music you can think of. I've played in chamber groups, quartets, saxophone ensembles, big bands, small jazz combos, wind ensembles. I've played in like musical theater pits. There's a lot of really cool stuff that I've been able to do and see in my history with music.
I love it. Let me ask you this. So do you come from anybody that plays music? Like any of your family members, musicians, prior to you picking up the saxophone and deciding to join band?
Band was a really big thing for my mom. My mom in high school was also a percussionist. She played timpani and she was like a front ensemble member. And my mom's a really good percussionist. I think had she been able to go to college for something like that, she would be cracked. You know, she'd be amazing. But it's definitely cool. Like all of my siblings have done music so far, except for my sister, who seems to be an athlete, which is crazy.
Hang on a second. Let's just back up a little bit. No, that's awesome. No, she's, I mean, your sister is really, flexible, with the gymnastics in ways that I can't even fathom.
Yeah, gymnastics, she's done for a while. She's tried out for basketball. She's done volleyball. She's taken her middle school volleyball team to a championship, which is really cool. And then also she's a runner. She's a track star.
She's the Tom Brady of middle school sports. What do you want me to say?
Yeah, she's very well-rounded in that, but she doesn't seem really any of the slightest interest in band.
Music, you know, I was kind of against, not even against band. So just to back up from my own history with music. So my mom's dad and my dad's dad were both drummers. They were both in bands. My pawpaw, my mom's dad, he did his own band. I actually, I have his sticks that he whittled from two pieces of wood when he was just a kid. And he would take those sticks and hit them on pillows. And as a graduation gift, he gave them to me. But he formed his own band. I don't even know the exact year. And then my other grandpa was in a praise and worship band, but he just loved playing the drums. They both, every time I see him, tapping fingers, you know, the rhythm just runs through them very well. And surprisingly, I had zero interest in music for the most part. You know, I mean, I like music a lot. I always listen to it and it was always part of my life. But I got a drum set from my cousin who was just getting rid of it. And it was the crappiest drum set, I mean, ever, really. Like, yeah. not the best quality, but a good set to start on and see if there's something there. And of course, immediately started taking lessons and there was something there because it's in my blood. And then seventh grade, for those that don't know, when you start middle school, at least where we are, you start band in sixth grade and you just move every single year. It's anticipated that you just learn from last year. But I started in seventh grade because I just didn't have any real passion. But my dad said, if you get a drum set, I want you to join band so you actually learn about music, right? And so I did that, and I had a lot of catching up to do. And a lot of it really was boring to me at first because it's not drumming on drum sets. It's xylophones and scales and learning all these like musical stuff. And to be honest with you, I consider myself more of a drummer than I do a percussionist just because I am not musically great, right? Like I have to, where most people learn to sight read, you know, actual notes and sounds, I'm not good at that. I'm good at reading rhythms and I can tell you how to play it and I can play it myself. And that's just kind of what I've moved on to more so in my focus. But yeah, like you said, we did middle school band and then we did high school marching band and all the accoutrements that come with that, jazz band and wind ensemble, and some of the best years of my life. And now I'm sitting here as the percussion instructor of the marching band at our old high school. So yeah. I go in and I don't teach the front ensemble because that's a whole different universe that I just couldn't teach, to be completely honest with you. But I do teach the drum line, and it's been such a blast to be able to teach kids and kind of this week we did auditions for next year's drum line to see who's on what drums. And that was nerve-wracking for me because I'm like, I've never been in the position to like make or break somebody's want to play a certain drum. You know what I mean? But yeah. I also got a chance to look at what, like who's practicing what and really say, all right, they might not be there yet, but this is a very easy thing to teach. And I can instill that wisdom on this person and help them out and make them even better than they are. And yeah. That made me feel really good to think like, oh man, like I can use my music knowledge for something. But, you know, now I'm in a local band. We've been playing for God, almost a decade at this point. And that's my drum set time. I really like to just get on the drums and jam, especially rock. Like rock's just kind of my thing.
Yeah,
but no, I like all music for the most part. I mean, it's music is always there. You know, take the dialogue out of Star Wars and make it a silent film with the music, and you understand that movie completely. You know, so oh, I think
absolutely
music is the great communicator, and that's just how I view music. You know,
well, you know too, and like. Music is a very generational thing. I mean, even from the original, you know, from the origins of music and how that's been, it's always been a community device and it's a generational thing. So my question for you is, what kind of music did your parents like and how do you feel like that affects your taste today?
Well, my dad was very much, both my parents were grew up in the 70s and 80s in their like most formative years. And so my dad was a big time like rock fan, you know, like he showed me AC/DC for the first time. He introduced me to Pink Floyd, which is, you know, in my spoiler alert, it's probably in my top five bands of all time because of the diversity. But I really like, And then also 80s pop, like that was huge when they were like Flock of Seagulls. Like he introduced me to a lot of that, and that kind of affects if I like comfort music. What do I want to listen to if I'm like kind of feeling sad? Well, let me listen to this music because I think about when my dad showed me this music. It just takes me back to that memory. But my mom was also very much, she wasn't that big into rock necessarily. But another one of my favorite bands of all time, and criminally underrated because it's a disco band, but ABBA is fantastic. I love ABBA. Like ABBA's I listened amazing. To ABBA Gold, their greatest hits album, the other day, completely on my own. And it was just like, man, this band is just really good. So I'll listen to ABBA. I mean, I'm pretty diverse in how I listen to it. And then Beastie Boys was also big right when my dad got into college. They really like blew up. And so if I get into like rap, if I'm in a rap mood, like Beastie Boys is definitely in there. Run DMC is definitely in there. I like a lot of the older school stuff that they introduced me to. And it's definitely paved the way for like what sound I look for. Some newer rap today, I don't jive with because it just doesn't sound musically like something that I enjoy. But then you get Kendrick Lamar's To Pimp a Butterfly had a really old school sound, and I was like, this is amazing. I really like this. And it's just the sound that comes through that's almost generational. I vibe with that because my parents vibe with something very similar. You know what I mean? So that's kind of where I sit. From generation to generation. And then my own kids even enjoy stuff that I listen to. You know what I mean? It's yeah. It is generational. What about you?
My dad grew up in St. Louis for a lot of his life, for at least for, from what I understand, a pretty good chunk. So he was smack dab in the middle of some of the most integral East Coast hip hop ever.
Right. So
as my dad moved to Georgia in the 90s and grew up, especially like in high school, Outkast, Ride or Die, like SWV, a lot of these like R&B, Boys to Men, heavily influenced the way that I am drawn to music. As a saxophonist, I've always been drawn to jazz.
Mm-hmm.
And another one that's actually, I feel kind of niche, but my mom's also a huge theater person. So my mother really instilled in me a love for musical theater, and blessings be what they are, a ton of jazz music, almost all of it from the early stages of jazz, is arrangements of either stuff from Golden Age musicals, mm-hmm. Oscar Hammerstein, things like that, or even outside of that, that created what is the American songbook today.
Right.
My dad, I'm also sure, huge Bing Crosby fan, so like that kind of Christmas music, old and we'll school, talk about yeah. Christmas music a little bit later, but it, just that kind of old right. school appreciation. And then the same for me as well as like 80s pop. I remember like I turned 16 and my parents had kind of started to show me all of the amazing 80s music out there. Hall & Oates, Huey Lewis, dude. George Michael, Wham, all of it. I mean, David Bowie. I mean, my parents literally sent me on a deep dive, and well, I was 16, and literally I got so into 80s pop. And then that kind of shifted its way into like 80s funk with like Earth, Wind and Fire.
Oh yeah.
Washington Grover, things like that. So yeah, it's hugely influenced the way that I listen to music. And I think it's funny because I do try to share those things with my daughter, mm-hmm. and my kids. But I look at so many different things. I listen to so much different right. music. That it is very, it's very influential in my life, and I want it to be that same way for my kids.
Right. It's complicated to narrow down one specific genre as like, what, if you were to say what genre of music defines you, you'd say pass, like it's too difficult. Yeah. I imagine, I mean, you and I were together when Hamilton came out, but like Hamilton being musical theater but also like inspired entirely by classic like hip-hop, like mind blown. And I'm not the biggest musical theater fan, but I love Hamilton.
Yeah.
And that one is, I mean, that is truly, if you want to get into musical theater, like I would say start with Hamilton, because it's a very good blend of the two, of a genre you wouldn't think would be on a Broadway stage. And then you can start branching out and seeing all these other kinds of shows that have pop or rock or, you know, it, whatever. It's not just opera music that most people.
Well, yeah. And even like, so I was a theater kid in high school, and one of my absolute favorite composers and show writers is Jason Robert Brown. He did The Last 5 Years, Parade, which is now on Broadway with Ben Platt. I understood the context of the show, the writing and the book of the show, but I never had an appreciation for the brilliance that is the contemporary composing that accompanies those shows.
Yeah.
So Jason Robert Brown's music is super, like when you look at like the piano parts or even like the orchestral segments, very contemporary, very rhythmic, and very difficult.
Yeah.
That was something that, like, after I study that kind of music, and as a classical saxophonist, you are really hands-on with a lot of contemporary compositions, because the instrument in that facility is super young, and I could go on and on about that.
Right.
But rediscovering Jason Robert Brown through that light has been so much fun, because I look at it, especially like singing wise and acting in that element. A lot of his shows are just so interesting in that way.
Right.
And iconic. They're unique to him. Another composer that is extremely, I would say, connected to that contemporary composition things, where it almost is like an opera, but more of those contemporary classical elements, like Stephen Sondheim. That's a huge comfort music thing for me. I love listening to Sondheim. Sunday in the Park with George, Into the Woods, Sweeney Todd. Those are just to name a few. But all of those things, I still listen to those things to influence my own playing. And when I need a creative boost, those are the people that I turn to, honestly, the most.
Mm-hmm.
Is those people that, like, my parents showed me, but also those just legendary composers in the musical theater world.
Yeah. Let me ask, whenever you're playing, you don't currently play in any ensembles right now, I assume, right?
Yeah, no. I finished my ensemble credits and things. I finished all that up a couple years ago.
So when you were doing ensembles, like, say, I'll just say jazz band, like, so say you were doing jazz band and a lot of improv goes into playing, did you ever look back at a specific show tune music or anything from any genre of music and say, like, let me try to rip something inspired from that, right? Like, is there a riff or something that you're like, oh, that's cool, I'm gonna pop it up in the next one?
I actually have like a perfect example for this. We were playing, it's called the Broadway Ball. It's like a big fundraiser that they do for the dance and theater department at CSU. Mm-hmm. And the guest was the guy who played the original Tony in West Side Story.
Oh.
So he came in, and for his intro music, we had the big band there, and we played Buddy Rich's arrangement of West Side Story,
mm-hmm.
which, if you've never listened to it, is wicked. And it's such a different take on Leonard Bernstein's original composition, but it still has a lot of those themes and the jazzy elements of it.
Right.
And I didn't necessarily have a solo in it, but the lead alto at the time, Brian Canonigo, great friend of mine, he's a great alto player,
shout out Brian,
he had quoted something that I thought was familiar, and he ended up showing me another album, which, check it out if you want to. Oscar Peterson plays West Side Story, and that's mm-hmm. that's a very small form quartet or trio, I believe. Pretty sure it's a trio. But he had pulled a quote from Piano, which kind of blew my mind at the time, but really shaped the way that, like, I have always approached quotes or, you know, different things. But that's a constantly a thing in jazz. As a jazz student, you're constantly transcribing, you're constantly annotating, you're constantly listening to these albums. So especially when we get into top five albums, with our buddy, in a future episode, a lot of mine come from these jazz albums that I've just listened to on repeat, because the best way to learn transcription and that process to pick up the jazz vocabulary is to just listen.
Right.
And you're constantly, you know, you'll talk with people about it, especially in a university environment.
Right.
So a ton of my albums come from that.
Yeah, our band that I'm in, we do a lot of, we're a cover band, so, you know, we listen to songs and say, like, this would be a cool song to do. And sometimes it's a little difficult to to pull off that genre. You know, that's just like, that's not really something that we're into. But honestly, we will sit on YouTube and find covers of songs, but like it's a rock cover instead of like a funky cover or a slow cover. And then we go, okay, this is a way, this is a gateway for us to kind of move genres, but take this song and do it. And then really from there, you make it your own and try to craft something that, how do we take like an iconic piece of the original and put it in here, even though it's a different genre? And I mean, yeah, you're constantly taking as a musician so much inspiration from others. I know, like Taylor Hawkins has a solo drummer for the Foo Fighter passed away last year. But he said, his favorite band was Queen, especially Roger Taylor on drums. And he said on the song Rope by the Foo Fighters that he does this drum break, you know, his different, like three different solos. And one of the solos he fully admits is ripped from the Killer Queen live album. And it's on a song called Keep Yourself Alive. And in the middle of that song, Roger Taylor just goes on a massive drum solo, and it's the coolest thing ever. And Taylor Hawkins was like, I'm going to find somewhere to put that. I want this part of the solo in a song. And so he's like, all right, Taylor, you got to have a couple little fills here. And he's like, I'm just going to do that. Like, it just sounds cool, and I want to do that. So you're always looking for inspiration and taking stuff. And I always think every piece of music that will ever be made has already been played.
Yes.
And it's a really about finding different patterns and doing something unique with the things that have already been played. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Saxophone lends itself to that very heavily because like the instrument compared to something like trumpet, clarinet, flute, which are literally just like timeless age-old instruments that like we figured out that buzzing makes noise, and we knew that reeds vibrating made noise, or wind, especially in like flute specifically. Mm-hmm. But the context of like the creation of the saxophone is like it's meant to just in simplest terms, it's meant to be a louder clarinet because it was meant for military bands in France. So as people got their hands, especially like for jazz, as people that, you know, were making music, especially like African-Americans in New Orleans, like they got their hands on whatever instruments they could. Right. And saxophone, because it was the production of saxophone was kind of pushed by just industrialization in general. Because it's made out of brass or another type of metal, yet it's still a woodwind. Mm-hmm. The coolest part is that you do have very specific sources that you can pull from. And the discography of so many of these artists has literally bled its way into the entire culture of saxophone, whether that be classical or jazz. And people always talk about it as two sides of the same horn, you know, classical players and jazz players, but the best players are people who can do both, and people who understand the inner workings of both sides of the horn. So especially with like improv, so many different people pull from different elements. One of my favorite groups right now, and one of my favorite saxophonists of the modern day, is Patrick Bartley. He plays with this group called the J Music Ensemble, and they take a jazz quartet, or even really any size ensemble, because he constantly has guys coming in and out of the group, subbing and playing with them, and they play video game music. So like all the awesome like jazz and funk music you hear in Mario Kart, they'll play mm-hmm. it. They'll play stuff from like Persona 5 or even like Pokemon and stuff like that. And they do incredible arrangements of it. Like these are just some of the greatest arrangements. And Patrick Bartley's like commitment to understanding how the style translates to that kind of an ensemble and the influences that jazz music has had on Japanese culture lends itself to very cool content. So definitely, if you're interested, check out J Music Ensemble, especially if you love like video game music and jazz.
Right. Yeah. Well, I've had conversations with different people about music, and there's kind of a debate. What's the preferred way of listening to music? Is it listening to the album as it is presented? You know, you wait for them to make an album and you buy it on CD, vinyl, tape, if you still mess around.
If you luckily still have a tape player.
Exactly. there's so many different mediums. Or is the preferred way to see it live with the artist or the band that has made it? And for me, I love a good album. But I really love seeing concerts.
Oh yeah, man. Nothing beats the energy of a good concert performance. I mean, exactly. And it, as someone who's been able to, has had the opportunity to be able to perform in multiple different facets, that was always my biggest goal, was to bring the energy and to have really just show-stopping energy.
Right. You want to captivate the audience. And I think when you see a band play something live, there's something about it that has just a different emotion. It makes you think about the song you're listening to in a different light. And I think it means something different for everybody. And that's what I love about it. And the crowd jives with it. So what we want to do today is do kind of an abbreviated top five. We're going to do top three, and it's going to be our top three concerts. Now, these concerts are ones that we've been to or ones that we've seen the recordings of. There's no real rules to this. It's just concerts that we've seen with our eyes, whether it was live and in person or a YouTube video of a concert that happened. Because let's be honest, so many great concerts have happened before we were even alive.
Oh, yeah.
So we want to talk about some that we've seen that really just stand out. So, Peyton, I'm going to let you go first.
So my first of the top three concerts is a recording. I was not alive for this concert, but it was also just this recording specifically is one out of a residency of concerts. And my first one is Live at the Sands Hotel, Frank Sinatra and Count Basie. So the Sands Hotel was in Las Vegas. This was a huge concert from back in the day. The Basie Band, this is textbook Sinatra. And any music student knows, like, if you're playing Sinatra, this is the recording to come back to, is Sinatra Live at the Sands. Quincy Jones, this is just such an integral album. And it's cool because as a concert and as a live recording, you feel like you're sitting in Sinatra's living room. He has these banters with not only the band, but like with the audience, that you feel the energy through that recording. And it's such a cool thing to listen to retrospectively. But that's my number one.
That's your number one?
Or let's put that one in number three. Put that one in number three. We'll start at number three.
Okay. Whew. All right. So my number three is I was at this concert. Now, it's not flashy. It's not the Sands Hotel. But a few years ago, I saw Huey Lewis in the News at Wild Adventures theme park. And, you know,
yes,
like I said,
sir,
it ain't the classiest venue. But Huey Lewis in the News is one of my favorite bands. And I actually talk about generational music. My grandfather, my dad's dad, first introduced me probably 15 years ago, over 15 years ago, maybe. He had just Huey Lewis and the News Greatest Hits album in his car. And he took me out to his car one afternoon or one night. And he was like, I want to play you this band. And he plays it for me. And like, it was, what song? The Heart of Rock and Roll opens the album. And I'm just like taken aback, right? I'm like, whoa, like this is cool. It's got horns, it's rock, but it's also kind of jazzy and soulful. And then Power of Love comes on a few songs later. And I realize this is the band from Back to the Future. Cause I had known Back to the Future by that point. And then Back in Time, and I'm like, I know this band, but I love this band. And he passed away February of 2017. And in June of 2017, I saw Huey Lewis in the News. And so being there, I it was like Grandpa was next to me. It was just, they're playing all the hits, and Huey Lewis is belting these songs out. They do a couple acapella songs. The whole band just gets in front of a microphone and sings acapella. And I was like, this is one of the greatest concerts ever. Even if it's not like a super glamorous concert, like that one just meant so much to me to be able to see that band. Yeah. And hopefully I get to see him again one day. Who knows?
I think that's a great pick. My number two it was a Christmas big band concert. We drove out to Athens, me and some buddies, because this band is like the staple of big bands today. And it's the best group that does it live now. We had the opportunity to see Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra with Wynton Marsalis, and they played Christmas music. The coolest part about this band and seeing them live is if you study big band music, you know how precise things can be without a conductor. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody has precise cutoffs, precise entrances. When the saxophone section plays a soli, it is clear and it sounds like one horn. This concert checked every single box. Because Wynton was actually there. He was playing that night. My favorite, the lead alto player, Sherman Irby, was there. This was just an incredible concert. I mean, my jaw was on the floor like the whole time. But it was such an awesome experience as a musician at that point to be able to see the textbook perfect version of what I love to do. And especially when you take a band like that that does really complicated music, you know, really like just kind of tooth and nail hard arrangements, to see them play Christmas music. And it really just kind of cracks in on how strong their fundamentals are as professionals and as vetted professionals. That was one of the best concerts I've ever seen in my life.
That's awesome.
It was a great live show. Totally great way to get like just cheer and merry in the holiday spirit.
Oh, yeah. How was the music for Christmas music? I mean, everybody should love Christmas music. I know some people don't.
Their music has such a – they're very stylistic about it. So, like, it is covers at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But – jazz has always been connected to Christmas music and what we think of as Christmas music. So like a lot of the stuff that they did, they closed out with Go Tell It on the Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect for jazz, but it had so many elements that they switched between styles. Like they went back and forth between like bebop and funk and like gospel music, and the ending was like this New Orleans march, was just such a celebratory event. I mean, everybody's, it just felt so amazing to really be there. Mm-hmm. And to feel like you're in on that party, you know?
Yeah. You get to celebrate with everybody. That's a good one. My number two, I wasn't alive for it, but my parents both were at the at the concert. And I've seen it on YouTube. I listen to it on iTunes almost every day. Not the whole thing, just like different tracks, but it's Pulse Live by Pink Floyd. It's the last Pink Floyd show, last tour they ever did. And I just love this show. I mean, they've got the big screen, they've got the laser show, the track list is amazing. And I never got to see Pink Floyd live, but there's an amazing tribute band called Brit Floyd that I've seen 7 or 8 times now, maybe more. And what they do is they took the concept of the Pulse tour, the circular screen and the lights and the laser show, and they use that as the blueprint for their shows. And the music, when they play, I feel like I'm seeing Pink Floyd. It is the modern day Pink Floyd to me. And so if it weren't for that Pulse tour and that show, I feel like I would not have Brit Floyd to see and enjoy Pink Floyd music. But that show is really amazing. The whole band is on it. I mean, it is tight. It's rocking. The show, like the effects are amazing. I love that show. It is so good. And if you like Pink Floyd, I mean, you probably already know about this show. But go on YouTube and look it up. It's an amazing show.
Yeah, no, for sure, dude. Closing it out, I have a few honorable mentions. I don't know if you do. Another honorable mention of mine is Wolfpack live at Madison Square Garden. Wolfpack is a funk band out of Michigan. They're incredible, dude. I mean, just such a tight groove. I mean, these are guys that really understand like the fundamentals of funk and live chamber music playing in that genre. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely one of my honorable mentions. I'll only give one, but my number one pick. Last year, I had the opportunity to go see Jacob Collier on his Jesse Volume 3 tour. Man, I mean, if you know anything about Jacob Collier and you know his approach to music and the way that he really kind of will pull the listener out of their comfort zone with his harmonies and with his grooves and the way that he builds his music, seeing it on live is mind-blowing, because you have this guy who is remarkably talented and is remarkably attuned to what it takes to create music and really just be experimental with it.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing that live, just so much energy on the stage. This guy, it's like they pumped him full of gasoline and just let him go. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
So seeing him jump on stage, he does this thing where he plays the audience. So he'll have you sing. He'll have this side of the audience sing a note, this side of the audience, and this side, the middle, sing like in harmony. And then he moves you up and down based on it. And he will play like, he plays the audience, and it is such right. a cool experience to be in the audience when that happens. He also just has so many great collaborations, and especially Jesse Volume 3 really kind of dug into the R&B elements mm-hmm. Of his kind of music. So seeing that and hearing a lot of those specific tunes was just such a great experience.
Yeah.
I definitely, Jesse is supposed to be like a 4-part album experience that he's working on. And he just released on Instagram, like a couple of tidbits of Jesse Volume 4 and him working with the different people. But yeah, the guy's cracked. I mean, he can literally do anything he wants and I will pay for it.
I mean, I'm like that with a couple of different artists. Tough honorable mentions. I've seen Train live. That was a great concert. Don't remember too much of it, but that's my fault. Saw Toto and Journey a couple months ago. It was amazing. I'm going to throw my honorable mention as Third Eye Blind. My dad and I went to go see them back in March. And man, like they play Jumper. And They get to the guitar solo, and I've got video of it. I'll try to find it and share it on the Facebook page. But at one point, the whole band cuts out because the crowd is singing the guitar solo. They're not singing lyrics. They are singing the guitar solo to Jumper. And that was like, and I caught it on camera, and I was like, this is surreal. Like, this is awesome. Yeah. And I was like, they have to feel so cool to be like, man, like, we made something that people are singing the music to, not even like lyrics. Like, that is such a, that's gotta be a cool feeling. But my number one concert, I've seen them twice. They're my favorite band. And that's Foo Fighters. Foo Fighters was easily the best concert I've ever been to. I got two floor seats the year I graduated high school for their tour, and went and saw them. And then they were playing in Jacksonville, and I went and saw them again. But
yeah,
Dave Grohl, I mean, the whole band is really good. But when you talk about matching like the energy that goes on into a concert, Dave Grohl is maybe the best front man in the running for best front man of all time. He just knows how to work a crowd. He knows how to keep it energized. He is just it's almost a 3-hour concert of him just running around and screaming and singing. And I love it. And then, you know, Taylor Hawkins was one of my favorite. I think he may be my favorite drummer of all time because his energy, I copy a lot of his play style and his energy when I play the drums myself. And the camaraderie that him and Dave Grohl had was just unmatched. I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, talking 25 years of friendship, and that goes into playing those concerts. And I will miss that, but I am excited that the Foo Fighters are not gone. And then I want to shout out, I mean, like Nate Mendel on bass, Pat Smear and Chris Shiflett on guitar, Rami Jaffe on keys and everything else. I mean, like that is just in every song, you know what I mean? Like, even if you don't know it, you've heard it and you know it. And then you just match the energy. It's hard to have a bad time at a Foo Fighters concert. And yeah. I will go. Like, I am whoever their next drummer will be. I will be there. I don't care. I love that band, and I just want to feel that like energy. It'll be different. Unfortunately, it'll be different, but I know that no matter who's playing the drums, Dave Grohl is the front man, and he will keep the show hyped.
Yeah.
And that's sure. I mean, that's my favorite concert.
Dude, and you know what? Like, I'm very excited for the future concerts that like my kids will ask to go to.
Oh, yeah.
And even like just like our favorite bands that are like our, you know, that we grew up on, like like earlier when off of the podcast we mentioned the Jonas Brothers.
Right.
Imagine, you know, later in the future our kids are gonna witness the Jonas Brothers farewell tour.
Right. That's weirder crazy to me.
Because I mean, even now we are just seeing like Elton John just did his farewell tour. Aerosmith is about to do their farewell tour with Black Crow. So many of those bands that we grew up on and our parents grew up on.
Well, think
are
about
now
this.
On their way out.
Think about this. My mom and dad grew up listening to Journey way back in the 70s, right? And for my mom's birthday, my wife and I bought her tickets, and the three of us went to see Journey, and it was their 50th anniversary tour, right? Now, the Foo Fighters, they were going to go on their 25th anniversary tour when COVID hit, so we didn't quite get that. But my son, my oldest son, for sure, is a big – he loves the Foo Fighters because I love the Foo Fighters, and I play it. I played the Pretender for him when he was in utero. Like, I mean, he just and he would kick around to it. Like, that's just what I played. And it's crazy to me to think, like, fingers crossed they're around for another 25 years and I get to take him to the farewell tour for the Foo Fighters. Like, that would just be amazing. And hopefully he and I can go see them many times before that. You know what I mean? But that is a weird thing to think about, what our kids will witness in their lifetime. Band-wise.
Yeah, like who will, I mean, you know, obviously the big concert that everybody's talking and going to now is Taylor Swift.
Right.
easy. That, I mean, you know, if Stella ever gets into that and is a Swiftie, yeah, we're going to that concert. Yeah, we're going to go see it. You know what I mean?
I will take out a second mortgage on the home to see T Swift. I'm not afraid.
Yeah, right. but yeah, that's our top three concerts.
Yep, and like any good concert, it's time to end on a good note. So
yeah,
that being said, I'm Jackson.
I'm Peyton.
Keep on living the Pops life.
Absolutely. You guys have a good time. We'll see you next week.
Peace.